It's time for Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, the greatest automotive podcast in the known world with Ron Foreman, Brady Wright, and Steve Johann. Let's find out what's going on this week. And here is what's happening Tuesday, September 15th, 2020. Brady Wright, Ron Foreman, your host, Steve Johann, the excellent producer, and of course, joining millions, literally millions of listeners. This is the 153rd episode of Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. We're on iTunes, iHeart Podcast, Spotify, of course, Podomatic.com, our hosting site, and Stitcher, TuneIn, Player, FM, all kinds of other ones. We want to thank you for liking and following our Facebook page and for all of the latest shows on our archive. Right now, our first segment, as always, is Back to the Blacktop, and that is where Steve grabs deeply into his pocket and comes up with really cool stuff to talk about. For this week, I have absolutely no idea what he's going to talk about. As you may notice, the video says, I am at a remote studio secretly located in the deep halls of a mountain somewhere north of Snohomish.
Yes.
What's going on today, Steve?
Halls of the Mountain King.
That's right. We should get that song and play it.
We better not. Royalty issues. Well, it's a slow news week, but I have come up with a few tidbits worth chatting about.
Alrighty then.
First up is what to do with used battery packs that come out of electric cars.
Oh, good call.
And today, about 32 million electrified vehicles are in use worldwide. And a recent study estimated, including 8 million plug-in hybrids and pure battery electric vehicles, the rest are various types of conventional hybrids that don't need to be plugged in. By the end of the decade, they estimate by the consultancy firm that did this study, that the overall number will increase tenfold with a growing emphasis on plug-in-based models. So we've been talking about that. So they're estimating 30 million, 40, 50, 60 million of these things by 2030.
A ton.
It is.
Now, and they have some hazardous material in them. I mean, zinc and all kinds of cool stuff. So what did they come up with?
Well, the good news, according to the report, is the battery packs in the majority of these vehicles will have enough capacity left to find a second life. This include a variety of applications such as being used to power forklifts and other factory equipment, as well as for stationary applications such as backup cell towers and load leveling electrical grids. So if you think about grid systems, they're gaining momentum, and among other things, to fill in when solar arrays and wind generators are down, both are based on non-continuous energy output. So used battery packs might be a great way to offset nighttime and no wind time. So think about that. Eastern Washington, we've got these great big windmills.
Yep.
And in other areas, there's solar panels. Well, when it's cloudy, winter, snow's on it, you're not getting a lot of it. These packs could be, you know, you could probably have 1,000 of these things or whatever stacked up or more in a big building. And it offsets that energy. So now all of a sudden it's pumping out the energy. Well, then maybe the solar, when it's working, part of it could be going to generate to recharge the batteries while it's
recharge
going
the
to
batteries.
Feed
you know what else would be a
the
really
rest
good
of the grid.
Platform? I'm surprised. Maybe somebody has already thought of this. I can't be the only one. But, you know, there's lots of remote medical clinics that go places where there isn't power.
I know of an outfit that does that, yes.
Yeah, so, you know, powering dental drills or surgical equipment or something like that in places where there isn't the infrastructure to do it, that might be a really good, you know, second or third use for those things. I would be surprised if somebody isn't already thinking about that.
You know, that's interesting because I do know of a nonprofit. We happen to know the guy that founded it, and he's out there. He goes to hot spots in the world. And they have outfitted like a container, and they've turned that container into a mobile medical unit. But it's not mobile per se, but they ship it, and it's got all the instruments. It's got the dental chairs. It's got the other examination equipment in there. And, yes, they could use something like this. I mean, they have some solar, I think, already, but extra batteries donated would be an awesome idea.
Well, also in cases of emergencies, you know, fires, floods, famines, natural
disasters,
stuff like that, they could take those things on site where there isn't power to
help
out
there
people in that situation. Not a bad idea. I like that.
I like that. Well, big news for Porsche North America. They're getting a new CEO on November 1st with the entrance of Kjell Gruner, who has been in the position of top marketing executive. And now he's switching on over to be the CEO. So he's done such a great job at marketing. maybe he'll bring in that marketing expertise and even promote Porsche of America even more so. Because, I mean, they've done quite well here in the United States. But
well,
it would
be nice if somebody, you know, did enough work that people knew what Porsche was all about. I mean, I don't think anybody really knows the name. And
yeah,
no one
knows.
They could use some marketing help.
Yes,
no,
they could. Not. Yeah, as if they're not well known. Gosh.
Some German car company, we don't know who it is.
Yeah, yeah. The inventor of the B-Dub bug, so... In the ongoing saga of tampering with emissions software, we get the following story.
Yeah.
Daimler, who has denied the allegation, has agreed to pay out $1.5 billion to avoid a draw-out legal battle.
Yeah.
Daimler's settlement concludes a four-year investigation by regulators who said it was the second highest civil penalty imposed under the United States Clean Air Act. Deputy Attorney General Jeffrey Rosen said he hoped the fines would act as a deterrent to other companies engaging in similar conduct. Of course, V-Dub and all those guys, they had the problems with the diesel.
Right.
Well, you know, Daimler was part of it because of Mercedes and all that. So, you know, when you tamper with these kind of things, it's not a nice
Sooner
thing to
or
do.
Later, they're going to catch you.
Oh,
you know, it's a tough one.
And
that money. It's all money.
It's money. It's all money is exactly what it is. Because is that going to go to cleaner air with that $1.5 billion, or is that just going into the coffers of the government? You know the answer on that.
I have a perfectly good solution to this thing. If they have any kind of difficulty knowing what to do with some of that award, I personally have a GoFundMe page that I'd be happy for them to toss a couple of bucks my way, be okay?
Yes.
By the way,
I need some new equipment for the studio.
Operating from my home studio the way I am. Look, I have a friend.
Oh, there's the kitty cat.
This is Athena. She's come to help host the show today.
Oh, our cat loves to be up on the desk with my wife. And then I wanted to shift over because there's a couple really neat articles in Hemmings this way. First up is if you're a big Pontiac Firebird, Esprit Skybird fan, there is a 1998 blue Pontiac Skybird, the powder blue with the little emblem on it on the side,
that
the
was
decal.
A nice color. I like that color.
It was. And it was going earlier today up for sale, but right now it probably is already sold. I think I last saw it was like $3,500. Oh, no, $3,100 at 12 noon today. So I don't know what it finally went for.
Oh.
But it was
affordable.
If it went for that, I don't know. But your wife would love that.
Maybe.
It kind of reminds me of a story because when I was in Phoenix way, way back in the day, in 1978, I graduated from high school, headed to Phoenix 3 days later to go to a Votech school where I was learning how to be an electromechanical draftsman. Part of that school was automotive. But nonetheless, my first job down there part-time while I was going to school was working at a low-cost food market. And I was a bag boy, cart guy, whatever you do in a grocery store. And I would help individuals take their groceries, mostly ladies, over to their car, load it up. And one of the patrons had a beautiful Ladybird Firebird, one of these Skybirds. We're talking 78, so brand new. And I always told her how beautiful her car was, and she was always really nice to give me a tip. She always gave me tips. So that was a cool little story there. And she had a hot daughter, but I never ended up getting that thing hooked up. But
see how you are.
Now, speaking of cars for auction, a gone in 60 seconds, 1967 Ford Mustang official Eleanor Tribute Edition, backed by paperwork by the Eleanor Licensing Company, is going on sale. It is up. Check it out on Hemmings. 8 days. It's already at 100,000. It's going to blast out at a lot more than that.
Yep.
It's got $250,000.
Well, it's going to be big bucks.
Well, stick with us. We got a lot more here on Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust in a very...
Oh, yeah. Coming up, on the Windshield View, this time we get to talk to the man who literally became a legend in motor racing. Mario Andretti is next.
Cartoons Magazine is back. You know those crazy car comics from the past. They've returned in the all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of brand new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine full of one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available at your local comic book store, newsstand, and directly through Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com. That's cartoonsmag.com, where you can subscribe to a whole year's worth of fun. Cartoons Magazine, there's nothing else like it.
This is Mario Andretti, and you are listening to the Horsepower Chrome and Rust. Stay tuned.
I'm more resourceful than I thought.
My suit can still make an impression.
My video games are still game changers.
And my lamp can bring others a bright future.
Because when I donate my stuff to Goodwill,
it helps fund job placement and training for people right in my community.
Now my stuff gets a second chance.
And will give someone in my community
a second chance too.
Goodwill. Donate stuff. Create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. That's goodwill.org. This message brought to you by Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Listen and imagine. It takes 5 seconds to send a text, and for those 5 seconds, you're driving blind.
Life is worth more than a text.
Stay alive. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
In 95, I helped tow your trailer. And in 09, it was sparks from me, your chains, dragging behind your truck that accidentally started a wildfire.
Spark a change, not a wildfire. Visit SmokeyBear.com, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
My mind's out of gear, and my heart's in overdrive. I've everything to fear. I ain't never been more
Horsepower Chrome and Rust is back in the first half of the Windshield View with our guest this week, Mario Andretti. Welcome, Mario. It's an honor.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Oh, you bet. You are a legend, and I just want to kind of say that, folks, Mario is an Italia-born American race car driver, one of the most successful Americans in the history of the sport. He is one of only two drivers that have won races in Formula One, IndyCar, World Super Sport, Sports Car Championships, NASCAR, and midget cars, sprint cars, and we even found out that you won on the Pikes Peak. And there's so much more. I just want everybody to go over to MarioAndretti.com and check out your website, Mario. It's just a fantastic website. You've got everything there. So thanks so much for gracing us with your time tonight. We appreciate this. And I just kind of want to start out with, let's go back and talk about when you got your racing bug and who came alongside you and helped you make your dreams come true.
Oh, dear. Well, the racing bug began when I was still in Italy, back in the 50s. Italy was so prominent in Formula One with Ferrari, Maserati, Alfa Romeo, and present world champion at the time, Alberto Ascari, became my absolute idol. And it was just, one of those things that became, I have a twin brother, Aldo. He and I just became totally fascinated with the sport. And, I was basically following and dreaming and all that. And then when we came to the States in 1955 at age 15, we discovered that there was a racetrack nearby here where I live in Nazareth, and that's where it all started. I figured, well, America won't be so bad after all.
Wasn't that a 1948
Hudson? Yeah. Hudson. Well, we built that. Yeah, 2 years after arriving.
Hornet.
In the States. Yeah, we built a car to race locally, and. And that's in 59, 4 years after arriving here, we started racing. That's when my career began, because from 59 through my last competitive race was in 2000, the 24 Hours of Le Mans. So that was the span of my career. So again, we had a very auspicious beginning. Aldo drove the very first race. We two race drivers, one car. We had to alternate, and he won the very first race.
That's awesome.
Eaton feature, and I won the following week, and then we won more, and we crashed. We did all the things, but had a good beginning, and from there I wanted to move into midgets and open wheel, of course, and was winning there and moving on into sprint cars. Then wanted to get to the top level in Indy cars back in '64, and things started happening. My very first season in Indy cars in '65, I won the national championship. My first year out, I was the youngest driver to do so at the time. And was rookie of the year at Indy. So a lot of things were happening the right way. I was very fortunate. I was dodging a lot of bullets. Thank goodness somebody upstairs was looking after me.
Yep.
And again, this career just blossomed from there because of my ambitions.
Competitive spirit.
Competitive spirit was there for sure.
Well, Mario, so how did you bring in some sponsors to allow you to get into the Indy? I mean, that's a lot.
Here's the thing. As you mentioned, I didn't answer that part of the question. There's a lot of help. You cannot do it alone. I mean, it's right at the very beginning. There's some help from just people that are fascinated by seeing the desire that we're projecting and so forth. And so, again, even to build the first car, there's always a geek in the group, right?
Yep.
We didn't know everything, didn't know anything. You always depend on a lot of people. You sort of project a dream and what you want to achieve, and then there's people have to rally around you and try to be part of it, and that started with four buddies, and then later on, I mean, even my my father-in-law, helped me buy the very first midget, which propelled me to where I wanted to be. Because I started winning some races there, and then when you're winning, sponsors, are a little bit easier to obtain, and along the way, like I said, this is really what paves the road, and even getting into the top level. My first experience with the IndyCars was one of the top three teams in the league.
Wow.
And that's where you want to be. So, you're going to be a competitive car. So I wasn't worried about sponsors. Sponsors were there. I never hunted for sponsors. Basically the sponsors were coming, and that's it. Just at the beginning, I had some help, obviously from the family side, not my family, but my wife's family. And,
mm-hmm. Yeah, you had to kind of keep it on the down low from your dad till your brother outside.
That was another story. I mean, my dad actually, he was acting in good faith. I mean, he was, somewhat ignorant of the sport. And all he knew about the sport, if you don't follow it, then what do you see? The headlines. A lot of the headlines were fatalities. I mean, I was pontificating about Alberto Ascari. Well, Alberto Ascari was killed just as we were coming to America. So there goes your idol.
Hero,
when Aldo and I, we didn't dare tell him we're going to go start racing. When we started talking about racing, all you kids are crazy. They bring people back in the body bag. And actually, my dad, we ran the whole first season without my dad obviously knowing, and the only thing that was, you know, the only salvation we had was the language barrier. You know,
so was that the 48 Hudson?
Yeah, with the 48 Hudson. Right, you know, we were winning races, and locally, you know, we were in the paper and so forth, and at work, the boss was telling my dad, oh, yeah, congratulations, your kids are really doing well. He had no idea what the other guy was saying. You know, I thought that he was praising him for his work, and so that was a salvation. My dad actually found out we were racing when Aldo got hurt, the very last race of the season.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And he was actually in a coma. He was, basically a career-deciding situation for him.
Well, you know, that I think we're going to come up to our break here shortly, but and I want to move into, well, let's just say your attitude, Mario, sounds like what you propelled you to the top. Am I correct?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, listen, I had so much burning desire to do this that I never had a plan B. I always said that. I did not have a plan, no matter how impossible the situation seemed like. I mean, I was dreaming about this while we were in a refugee camp for 7 years. You know,
wow.
We were displaced from our home by communism. And we were in refugee camps in our own country, in Italy, for 7 years.
Well, I would like to explore that just a slight bit more. We're coming right up to our break. So hang with us, Mario. We'll be right back with more of our show.
The Windshield View will be right back with more with Mario Andretti on Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
You're into cars, you love a good time, and you'd rather build it than buy it. You just might love the Rad Bastards. We're a family-oriented, nonprofit organization. We believe in 1969 and older, in the rough is enough. Real steel and iron, old-school, traditional hot rods and rat rods. We get together, have fun, help each other build, and cruise like crazy, because that's what car clubs are supposed to do. The Rad Bastards are a new class of old-school, and our signature event is the Infestation every July. Join us at cruise-ins all over the Puget Sound and on the Rad Bastards Car Club page on Facebook. You're into cars.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Sensory sensitivity, repetitious behavior, lack of eye contact. You can see signs of autism in children as young as 18 months. Learn the signs at autismspeaks.org/signs.
Hi, I'm Danica Patrick. Watching my nieces grow, play, and learn is amazing, but not every child gets to be carefree. 1 in 6 kids in the U.S. are hungry. This breaks my heart, and it's something that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and gives it to families in need. To help, visit feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America.
I adopted Bento in 2010 from a shelter. A lot of people know him as Keyboard Cat.
That's just one adoption story that started at a shelter. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
Nurse, set up an IV. And you, her boyfriend, you were the driver?
Yes, doctor, but I didn't mean to hurt her. I only had a few drinks. I was just buzzed.
Just buzzed? Oh, then your girlfriend is fine.
Hey, sweetie, I feel great.
She's really okay?
What, are you kidding? No, not really. Nurse, get me a suture kit. Stat.
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation and the app.
Back in Vehicle City. Yes, we are, and this is the second half of the Windshield View on Horsepower Chrome and Rust, and we are continuing our conversation with Mario Andretti. And Mario, we were just going to talk about your experience with the refugee camp. And so fill people in what that was like, because this is right after World War II.
Yeah, indeed. I'll make it real quick. It's basically where I was born was in the peninsula of Istria, which is one of the regions of Italy, the north, far northeast part of Italy. And as you can see, Italy lost the war, so that territory was occupied and was given to Yugoslavia, given to Yugoslavia by the Americans, the Brits, and Russia.
Mm-hmm.
That's who made that decision. And so we became trapped inside a communist country overnight, hardline communism under Marshal Tito. And so there was a choice to maintain the Italian citizenship. It was a pact with Italy that we could leave and just leave. Leave with what you could carry, and they would absorb you, but it would be in refugee camp, you know, because they had no place to put you. And there were several in different parts of Italy. We wound up in Tuscany, in Lucca, and we were there from 48 to 55. But in 1952, an uncle on my mother's side advised my dad. He said, why don't you come to America, you know, and since things are not going so well there. And my dad applied for visas. 3 years later, the visas came through. My dad had almost forgotten about it. And so it was decision time. And my dad said, well, we're going to America and maybe come back in 5 years. Well,
good decision.
And that was it. And it was a big decision. It was the best decision could have been made because, and he said this all along, we're doing this for your future, for potentially to have the opportunity for you kids, you know, my twin brother Aldo, we had an older sister Anna Maria, and that's it. And so we came to America, and a lot of good things started happening, you know, to us. As you could see, as I said earlier, Aldo and I never had a plan B. We discovered a track here in Nazareth. We started working, building a race car 2 years after we arrived there at age 17. Age 19, we started racing, and on and on.
So do you think that your experience of living through what you lived through tempered you and gave you kind of what I would call the grit and the iron nerves to just get out there and say, this is all I want to do, and I am not going to stop at anything until I achieve my goals?
Well, desire. It's all about desire, burning desire to achieve something, and especially in the face of what you would call almost an impossible situation, like the way things were going for us, you know, in the family, displacing and so on and so forth. If there was something that appeared to be an impossible dream, it was that. But again, you know, we persevered, and opportunities came up, and we just grabbed them. And one thing led to another, and that's it. You know, it just worked. But that's when you have that positive, resolute mindset, and that's one thing that I possess for sure, no question about it.
No, to change the subject, Marlo, weren't you honored here recently by some folks finding your 1969 Indy car and presenting that to you? Is that accurate?
Well, last year, was my 50th anniversary of my win in Indy, you know, and so forth, you know. But
congratulations.
That was very nice. I mean, they had beautiful display at the Indianapolis Museum, not of just Indy, my career,
mm-hmm.
you know, all the different cars that I've driven over the different decades and so on and so forth. Even my Formula One World Championship car was there. It was beautiful. Something that I obviously held very, very dear. It was very nice for them to do that.
Were you able to actually drive the car?
I had driven, there were several over the year. There were like four cars at my disposal in there, but one of the cars I think is owned by someone from Texas, but I drove one of the cars that I had driven that is owned by Duncan Dayton, and he drives it in vintage car races, but I sort of set it up for him at the Glen a few years back, and now and then, you know, I get asked to drive some of these vintage cars. It's okay.
So the 50th anniversary, you got to drive it last year?
No, no. Actually, the car that I won the race at Indy is in the Smithsonian Institute, in the Smithsonian Museum. Yeah.
Very cool. Well, speaking of racing, I wanted to kind of segue into your family because you are a blessed man. You have not only succeeded yourself, you have decades and decades worth of winnings underneath your belt, but you have a son, you have a grandson that are active in the world of racing. Talk to us about that and what that makes you feel like and your involvement with them.
Yeah, I mean, as a family, as you can see, actually, as I spoke earlier, I have a twin brother, Aldo, and including him, so far there's eight of us in the sport.
Wow!
Four on his side, four
on mine. Family affair.
You know, and you know, with John, who's you know, you said earlier, you know, he passed away.
Yep.
At the young age of 52, you know, cancer, and but he was a very prominent racer. You know, very versatile. He won in NASCAR, he won in IndyCars, and anyway, he has his son Jarrett driving right now, and John's brother Adam was just here today. You know, with me, he's another racer. But that, as you mentioned, I had two sons, Jeff and Michael, and they both raced. And now I have a nephew. Grandson Marco, you know, who's currently active racing for Michael. As a family, you know, we've had some fantastic moments that you could never even dream of happening. You know, Michael and I in IndyCars, we were on podium 15 times together.
That's amazing.
Father and son.
Congratulations.
We were 15 times on podium. We were first and second 10 times.
Awesome.
And first and second 5 times. And again, you know, you cannot, you know, in 1986 at the Pocono 500, there was another supporting race, smaller race, and Jeff was in that race, and he won. He was on pole and won that race. Michael won the pole for the 500, and I won the 500. You know, Indy cars. You know, between
awesome.
The three of us, we clean house. You know, so in moments like that, you know, in 1991, 92, there were four of us, four Andretti's in the Indy 500, same family. It was Michael, Jeff, and John, nephew John, and myself. And that never happened before or since. We four, you know, family members qualified for the Indy 500, so... And there were other moments like that. So we've been at Le Mans, you know, just teamed up together. You know, Mike and I, Mike, John, and Michael, and so you know, like I said, on and on. The sport has been fantastic to us as a family, and there were various successes along the way. Michael was really had a fabulous career. Before he just decided to come out of the cockpit and become an owner.
Mm-hmm.
Now he has, he's very ambitious. You know, he has, he's fielding five entries in the Indy races. He's had as many as 6 entries at Indianapolis this past weekend. In Mid Ohio, the IndyCar race, his cars were 1, 2, 3.
Wow,
that is ambitious.
So he has a team in Australia, supercars. He has a team in Europe in the Formula E for the electric cars. Like I said, I'm very proud of Michael, and this is not a secret, but. He's looking to start a Formula One team to represent the U.S.
Wow!
We have things to look forward to.
So the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree, does it?
Well,
you
know,
ambitious
this is
in your drive.
Something we love. This is what we love. You know,
yep,
and,
have to love it.
That's what we want to pursue.
Well, and with spouses that are very supportive, it sounds like you've just got a whole family. combination there. I mean, that you can't ask for more than that. I know somebody that's in the custom bike world. He just passed away, Arlen Ness, but his son and grandson and their families are all very, very involved in the same business, same enterprise. And man, very, very few people are able to do what you're doing there, Mario. I mean, you are a very blessed man.
A legend. Very blessed indeed. Yeah, I'll agree with that wholeheartedly, for sure.
So I wanted to ask you, who along the way have you become very good friends that were your hardest competitors and now have become very good friends?
Oh, we have several, actually. I mean, we've always been really tough competitors with the Unser family, you know, Bobby, Bobby and Al and Al Jr., you know, AJ Foyt, and you can go right down the line. I mean, in Formula One, you know, Jackie Stewart, you know, and Michael Senna. You know, over the decades, I had the opportunity to race against some of the very best that ever lived, you know, and ever put a hands on the steering wheel of a race car. And so these are, you know, magic times. And when you look back, as you say, you feel like, yes, I am counting my blessings every day, you know, because of those experiences.
Well, and I thought about that because it's just like any other sport, but it's different. It's not. Racing is a one-man or one-woman. You are in the cockpit. Everything is in your hands. Yeah, you got your crew that supports you, but it really comes down to you and your knuckles and your ability to drive. And everything else, I would think, just goes by the wayside. So you're out there. So take us through, just very quickly, take us through what a race really feels like. What being in there, what do you go to in a zone? How do you do that to engage? And then you go on, and you're blocking everything else out to stay focused.
Well, you mentioned one thing. Okay, you're out there on your own. However, it takes a lot of people, a great team, to provide you with the equipment and the tools to be able to do your job. So it's a lot more of a team sport. A lot of people don't realize, except for the moments, again, that you're out there by yourself. However, while you're out there by yourself, you got engineers, you have your spotters, you have your entire team is engaged. They're not in the car with you, but they're engaged with what you're doing. They, you know, they keep track of every mile, everything that's going on. Telemetry tells them everything that you're doing. You know, how you're turning your steering wheel, how you're braking, how you're accelerating, where your fuel mileage is, everything, and so. You're depending, they depend on you and you depend on them. You're never alone.
Great.
You're never alone. You're always, you're in communication you know, they inform you, you inform them. Yes, you're the only one turning the steering wheel, pressing the accelerator and braking, you know. but at the same time, everybody else has to do their job. And when you win as a team, 100%. Win and lose as a team. But as a driver, you know, you're in your zone, and you know what you have to do. It's up to you, of course, to execute. And again, it's basically, I look at it as just like in football, you got the quarterback. The driver's the quarterback. And if the quarterback doesn't have a good, you know, defensive line in front of you and good receivers, good, you know, everything has to be to gel to make the quarterback look good. That's what the team has to provide, everything to make the driver look good, and the driver has to execute.
Well, I appreciate that. I had a feeling you were going to say that, and you're exactly right. And Mario, we're coming to the end of this segment, and I just want to say it's been a pleasure to have you on. Thanks so much for joining us on the show.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Mario. It's been an honor. This is Ron. Thank you very much.
And we will have you back on. You're listening to the Horsepower Chrome and Rust Show. We've got a great story coming up next and a lot more waiting for you on the other side.
Today we decided to walk to school.
The light counted. 15, 14, 41, 31, I mean 13.
We took a left on Carroll Street. Danny's smart, but he gets distracted. I realized he forgot his homework. I hope he doesn't have another bad day at school.
When you can see learning and attention issues from their side, you can be on their side. That's why there's Understood.org, a free resource for the parents of the 1 in 5 kids with learning and attention issues. Go from misunderstanding to Understood.org.
This is Vince LaViolette from Shelby American in Las Vegas, and you're listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
Cartoons Magazine is back. You know those crazy car comics from the past. They've returned in the all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of brand new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine full of one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available at your local comic book store, newsstand, and directly through Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com. That's cartoonsmag.com, where you can subscribe to a whole year's worth of fun. Cartoons Magazine, there's nothing else like it.
Okay, Forrest Animal. Kids are coming to the forest, and it's up to us to make their visit a good one. Sparrow, have you practiced the most popular bird songs for the year?
Of course.
Catchy. I like it. River, how's the temperature?
It's a refreshing 52 degrees, man.
I love it. Turtle.
He's not here yet, man.
He's late every morning. Okay. Squirrel.
The forest has been preparing just for you. To learn more about cool things to do in the forest, visit discovertheforest.org.
I want to thank my mommy for loving me so much.
For taking me to the doctor when I broke my foot.
For leaving me alone when I wanted to be alone.
And now, as a grown-up, I'm thankful for being able to take care of you, my dear mom. For taking you to your therapies. For understanding that sometimes you simply want to be alone.
Roles change without us noticing. That's why AARP gives you the information to provide even better care for your loved one. Visit aarp.org/caregiver.
Yes, we're here to cause a little trouble. It's time for Cars Confidential. And we're back with another story from Fenders, Fins, and Friends. Well, Brady, what is up this week?
We got a great story this week. This one, and I know you'll appreciate it, being somebody who's, you know, in the process of building a car. The El Camino's coming along.
Oh,
I know.
Yes.
Believe me, in my garage, I got a bunch of this. The difference is mine's not invisible. The title of the story this week is Invisible Rust, but it's not.
No.
So recently, this car guy became actively searching for the next old car to purchase. And it's time, after 8 years with me, for the 58 Rambler in my garage to occupy somebody else's hallowed temple of wheels. So as a result, I'm making a daily computer search in the hopes of finding the Rambler's replacement. An online ad was advertising a 55 Ford as, and this is a direct quote, including all capital letters and exclamation point, absolutely no rust.
Oh, right.
I exchanged several emails and phone calls with the seller, and then I left for the 160-mile round trip required to check out this rust-free car. Ain't nobody be so bold as to make such a claim if it wasn't true, right? So upon arriving, my suspicions were aroused when I noticed that the stuck on the lower front corner of each car door was a large Ford logo sticker. Now, when I rubbed my hand over each sticker, I could feel the bubbling rust. Yeah, see? So I found another area of serious rust in the trunk lid. I brought these discoveries to the seller's attention, to which he replied, "You know, I think you're right. I've never noticed those rust spots before."
His nose is getting longer as he talks.
No. The stickers are brand new, mind you.
Yes.
So this was coming from a guy who had a garage filled with car guy stuff, car show trophies, an extensive tool collection, a 1934 Ford Roadster. I expressed my disappointment and left. Now, my next adventure was only a 70-mile round trip to inspect several interesting vintage vehicles being offered by a dealer, and while walking through the cars on display, I noticed a 64 Ford Falcon convertible. All four fenders had huge areas of rust, as did the rocker panels, resulting in this being at best a drive it until it self-destructs kind of car.
Mm-hmm.
Or a parts supplier for another Falcon restoration.
any repair of the existing rust damage would cost a minimum of twice what the car would be worth when the repairs were completed. So upon returning home, I went to the computer for the now standard 3 times a day car search. I visited the Falcon dealer's website where there were the words "no significant rust."
Significant.
In the descriptions of this Falcon, Webster's dictionary describes significant as in part full of meaningful, important, and momentous stuff. Trust me, the rust was momentous.
Yes.
The third sad example in this rant includes a restored 55 Pontiac that fortunately was only a 30-mile round-trip drive from home. The dealer was advertising the car. That is, it is what it looked like on the showroom floor in 1955.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm pretty confident that not many dealership showrooms back in 1955 displayed new cars with rust in the driver's door and a few other places in the bodies. Realizing that the necessary repairs would result in way too large of an investment made it an easy decision not to buy the car that the dealer had described as an excellent example. So I went on my merry way, which included a trip back to the computer, spotting the seller's ad online. I emailed the question, "Is there any rust in the body panels of the Pontiac?" To which the seller responded, "No, sir, Mr. Lambert. She's as clean as a whistle and showroom fresh." So what are smart shoppers supposed to do when they find a car of interest? Well, they ask the seller lots of questions, and as for as many pictures as you can get prior to traveling to see the car, be very suspicious if photos of certain parts of the car are not provided. The farther away the car is located, the more information you should request. Consider asking an automobile appraiser or an unbiased third party in the seller's area to take a look at the car. I try to make an adventure out of my trips. I load up my car with some friends, stop for bad food along the way, check out some local night sights, make it a fun day.
Mm-hmm.
The day I purchased my Rambler was filled with a 350-mile drive, lots of laughs with three of my car buddies, and best of all, finding an actual rust-free car that was actually better than described.
Wow.
Good luck.
Good luck. I mean, I'm sitting there looking at my car, and it's like, from the outside, it looks quite good. And then you get up and you go, okay, yep. there's this. And
well, you know, the all of these stories are from Fenders, Fins, and Friends, which I don't know if this is reversed on the screen. It looks like it might be.
No, it's fine.
Is it? Okay, on my camera, it looks reversed. Anyway, this is one of Lance's books, Confessions of a Car Guy, and he's very nice to let us read stories out of it, of course, and I don't think he really cares too much. But yeah, we try to do one every week, and we're going to go back pretty soon to sharing some of the stories from the old Car Nut books, because David's doing great, and I haven't talked to him for a little while, but I'm thinking it might be fun to find some of those again. So in any case, if you guys have a special story that you'd like us to talk about, or a book that you know of that has great stories, car stories in it, and you want to have them shared on the show, give us an email at contact us at horsepowerchromeandrust.com and let us know. And we'll pick it up and get with the author and see if he minds some free promotion, because I don't think he probably would.
And if you have your own and you're a good writer and you've got, like, so let's say some articles that you've posted or been published and you want to get them recirculated, send them to contact us at horsepowerchromeandrust.com. And we will mention your name and read them on the show.
We will. In fact, if you can actually write a good story, even if it's a total lie,
oh yes, we'll
probably still read it and have fun with it. So,
the Pinocchio Award.
We've never done that before. So,
okay, can you imagine we could have our own Pinocchio Award? You know, like the fish stories that keep getting bigger, and then you have the Pinocchio Award the stories keep getting a little more exaggerated, exaggerated.
Oh yeah.
I mean, let's be honest. Telling car stories, I try to stay pretty close to what the reality is, but sometimes you get really excited. And I remember talking to guys, this is way back in the day, that, my car, I got it up to 160. And I'm like,
Oh, yeah, right.
This was in the 70s. I don't know too many cars with speedometers that said 110 that would go up to 160. But,
right,
you know, I mean, you know, it is what it is.
In the 70s, I did take my Harley Chopper up to 141, and nobody believes me, except I've still got the tag from, I mean, the timing slip from Pacific Raceways. So,
oh my goodness.
It was a running start, in all fairness. I didn't start from a standing start.
Okay.
But it was geared pretty tall. Wasn't quick off the line, but it did get up there and roll.
Yeah, but 140 on a Harley?
I know, it's frightening.
In a chopper of that?
Yeah, yeah, 16 over front end.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Those were the days when taking chances was just part of being who you were, right?
Yeah, I aged at least 10 years in that run and lost some hair, too, while I was at it. Great fun.
You know, there's a great commercial on the internet that I was looking at today, and it's a Bridgestone commercial, and it shows these two old people in an old car sliding around and racing on the salt flats, but you just don't know it's them until midway they open up the car.
Stop and get out.
Yes, and I went, that is a phenomenal commercial. I mean,
that's it. Well, you know what they say, drive fast, take risks. I mean, that's what age, that's a good deal.
Yeah, you know, old car stories tend to make the rounds, especially when you sit around with three or four or five people at a car show or sitting in your house or around your car, what you're working on. You won't even think about something, and then something will come up, and then it just all of a sudden it spins off.
Well, plus everybody's got a topper, you know. Oh, yeah, that reminds me of this one. Oh, yeah, well, oh, yeah. And pretty soon, you know, everybody's doing a story because we all have them.
And as Lance said in one of his former stories, when you have a certain car, then everybody comes up and tells you a story about their car or their brother's car or their aunt's car who happen to have the same car, and then on it goes and on it goes. And he wasn't too particularly impressed with that.
Well, sometimes that's the most fun. You make friends that way. Yeah, I do want to thank Lance for his great books. They're available on Amazon, of course, and the Vintage Vehicle Show website. The Nathan Lipinski weekly trivia question is coming up next. We also got a peek at next week's show, so put it in park, stick around, we'll be back.
Man, do I love card night. You ready, boys? You got a king?
Go, Fish Dad!
Oh, come on! This is WWE superstar Titus O'Neil.
It only takes a moment to make a moment.
Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Hang on till right after these messages.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to, are you? Kids, work, listening to the radio. You're busy. Which is great, because busy people can't get prediabetes. Oh my, I read that wrong. They can. Should have worn my glasses. So visit doihaveprediabetes.org and take a short test, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Looking for a job worth talking about? Teaching is creative, collaborative, and intellectually challenging. See why teachers have better work stories at teachdfw.org and learn more about becoming a teacher. Brought to you by Teach and the Ad Council.
Did you hear the news? Cartoons Magazine is back. Yep, those car-crazy comics from the past have returned in an all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine filled with one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available directly through the Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com.
I'm jumping in with my clothes on!
Most party fouls are pretty dumb, but if you decide to drink and drive underage, you could lose your license and your freedom. Learn more at ultimatepartyfoul.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Help us if you can. You're an El Camino. El Camino man. Only you can understand. Help us if you can.
Oh, he's an El Camino man. No doubt about it. Hey, welcome back. This is Around the Wheel. This is where we talk about the upcoming events and the Nathan Lipinski Weekly Automotive Trivia Question, which, of course, this week is a two-parter. And speaking of, well, I don't want to know upcoming events, but an ongoing event, you realize that this year's Rat Rod 1000 is happening as we speak?
Yes.
This weekend was the Rat Rod 1000, and it's been all over Facebook. You can go to the RSC group page and see it. They traveled all the way to the Rod Run. Well, not the Rod Run, but they went to the end of the world out there at Long Beach, and then they're traveling down the Oregon coast and just having a great time. Kevin Martin has been documenting the entire thing. And once they're all back in Spokane and the rest of the places that they come from, we should have them on and have them give us a kind of a recap.
Oh, yeah.
But a terrific event, just super. I don't know how many cars he had, but there's a ton. There's at least 20.
I think I saw a picture where they're pulling out a barbecue thing out of one of the trucks or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like,
yeah,
wow, they built it right in there.
It's all full bore. But so last week's trivia question was kind of fun. We did. I can't believe we didn't have a winner, but it was a pretty good question. It's Chrysler. Of course, everybody, Chrysler. They got a really big start in the business, but it wasn't what you think. And what I asked was, how did Chrysler get started in the business? And the answer was Walter Chrysler, who was originally a locomotive mechanic. He got into the auto business in 1912. And he publicly displayed his very own My First Car at the 1924 New York Auto Show. And in his first year of manufacturing automobiles, he actually sold 32,000 cars.
Oh, my
which
goodness.
Is pretty good for that time of, that time.
Wow.
And so, amazingly, it's a Googleable fact, but nobody came up with it this week, which is, okay, we just upped the prize for next week. There's yet another bucket of horsepower, chrome, and rust, barn fine dust at stake. This week's trivia question is this. The name Cord is, of course, endemic. Everybody understands what the Cords were. At least if you don't, you should. The man's name was E.L. Cord. And the question is, what was his job while he was making those iconic automobiles? Because it isn't what you think. If you know, you can get to us on our Facebook page. You could leave a message there or an answer there. You could message us on Facebook. You could email us at contactus@horsepowerchromeandrust.com. If you know what E.L. Cord's job was while they were making these really cool Cords, front-wheel drive cars, supercharged V8s, all those things, then get with us, and you too could have your name attached to a certificate with the 8x10 color glossy of the horsepower chrome and rust barn fine dust, which, as we all know, if you sprinkle on your car, quadruples the value.
Oh, that's right. It's now quadrupling.
In a barn. You have the barn fine dust there someplace. I know.
Yes, I do.
Yes. So, well, yeah, good luck with that one. And thanks to Nathan Lipinski for letting us use his name on the question, because he's answered an awful lot of these things correctly.
Well, he is. He won the winner's circle, and kind of like our guest tonight, winner's circle, well known. We typically talk about rallies coming up or events, and there were three of them this last weekend that went off just fine. Yep. There was one up in Arlington,
right,
a rally, and then there was a Cruising Colby. I got a late notice. I didn't get to get it on the show last week, but we put it
There's
out on the Facebook.
Pictures on the net, though. If you go to, if you do Cruising to Colby,
Cruising to Colby,
as a search on Facebook, you'll find the page. And there's a lot of pictures on there.
Yep.
Apparently, they had a really good time.
And then there was the Firebird versus Camaro rolling rally that took place on Sunday. Started at Triple X and moved around and came back later in the afternoon. And I'll be talking to the organizer actually on Thursday. He and I are hanging out.
Nice.
So, you know, there is a lot of creativity these days where people are just going, hey, we are going to gather, we're going to do our thing, but it's all going to be unofficial. So,
absolutely. Well, listen, it's been really, really great doing the show this way. We should do this again. The Horsepower Chrome and Rust Facebook page is up. You can check it out for, like I say, the winners of the trivia question. And, of course, our big thanks to Mario Andretti for being our guest this week. It's super interview. Great to talk to a guy like that, a legend for sure. We do reach over a million enthusiasts every week. And, you know, you can find us on Podomatic or Stitcher or iHeartRadio and all of those. For Ron Foreman and Steve Johann, I'm Brady Wright. Check us again next week at Horsepower Chrome and Rust.